This is The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Maiken Scott. After medical school, all those sleepless nights and tough exams, physicians have another major challenge to get through, the United States Medical Licensing Exam. 1,100 questions spread over 5 days. Fail and you cannot practice medicine in this country. The group that comes up with those questions, the National Board of Medical Examiners, celebrates its 100th anniversary this year. Todd Bookman takes a look at how the test has evolved during the past century.
Before the NBME, there wasn't a single test. Each state came up with its own licensing exam, which turned out to be something of a frustration for Dr. William Rodman.
In the late 1800s, he was offered a position in Philadelphia. He was in Kentucky as a professor of surgery at the University of Kentucky, and he accepted that position and was appalled by two things. First of all, he had to take another exam. This prominent author of textbooks, educator, came to Pennsylvania and they said, you have to take our exam to get a license. Secondly, he took the exam and thought it was an awful exam.
This is Don Melnick, president of the National Board of Medical Examiners. He says Rodman's Pennsylvania experience stuck with him. He would spend much of the next two decades trying to gain support for one test, a national exam so good that the states would want to use it to license doctors rather than administering their own. A good idea on the surface, but not one the individual states were necessarily ready to accept. Cue the Constitution.
Well, just like today, the 10th Amendment focus on rights of states to manage their own affairs is a pretty powerful political dynamic. Back in 1915, it was the same way. And so the notion of a national, not a federal, but a national entity being involved in assessing qualifications for licensure was seen as anathema by many and an intrusion on states' rights and state autonomy.
So Rodman proposed a voluntary national board exam, just an option for states and med students to consider. The idea got backing from the United States military, which was closely watching a war break out in Europe. A rigorous test, the armed services figured, could help ensure the best doctors were identified to serve at the front. And so the first national board exam was administered the following year in Washington, D.C.
It lasted for 6 days, and it was a complex examination that included essays, oral, bedside examination of skills, and real clinical skills exams. My favorite item from the first exam was that a student was given a tray with two pieces of fresh dog intestine. They had to suture the ends of the intestine together, and then one end was clamped off and they put water in it to a certain water pressure, and if the anastomosis line did not leak, they passed that item. A real clinical skills exam of a very practical test for someone who was doing surgery in those days.
Suturing, anatomy, physiology, and dogs. 10 men took the test, just 5 passed. Over time, the concept of a national exam gained steam. By 1943, all but 3 states recognized the NBME's boards as an alternative to their own licensing system. But by the 1950s, a new type of test question was coming into vogue, a simpler, more black-and-white way to measure knowledge, the multiple choice. After much consideration, NBME phased in this new approach. It did not go over well.
Not only did we hear pushback, but a large number of the states that recognized our certification for licensure declined to recognize this newfangled superficial exam that had just multiple choice questions.
A dozen states up and quit, said we can do better than having med students fill in bubbles on a sheet of loose leaf. But the NBME stuck to its guns, and for the next 40 years, the test remained multiple choice. 3 different tests, actually, given at intervals over the course of med school and residency training. Then, in the early 2000s, another big change. One of the original components from the 1916 exam got a second wind, the patient interaction.
It's just amazing how long it's taken for the concept of communication skills by physicians in their encounters with patients to be taken seriously.
Ruth Hoppe works with the NBME on assessing physician communication abilities. For those of us on the receiving end of a stethoscope, these skills are crucial, and not just because they make us feel more human. Research shows patients do better, are more likely to fill prescriptions and seek follow-up care when the doctor-patient relationship is stronger. A century ago, that idea would have been laughed off, says Kim Edward LeBlanc. He runs the clinical skills portion of the test.
You went to the doctor, didn't know what you had, you left, you didn't know what you had, but you had a bottle of medicine. So now those days are fortunately for the most part are gone, so that at least the doctor can communicate with you, act like a professional, not laugh at you for whatever you're complaining of, and you when you leave, you should have a very reasonable expectation to, one, know what your diagnosis is, and what's the treatment plan here.
On the modern exam, each doctor now spends a day in a test-taking center, seeing standardized patients, what the rest of us would call actors, who fake symptoms following carefully scripted scenarios. The interaction along with the diagnosis get graded. Judging by the results, most doctors are pretty good at this. In 2014, 96% of U.S. medical school graduates passed this portion on the first attempt. In fact, pass rates for all parts of the NBME tests, which are now called the United States Medical Licensing Exam, are in the mid-90s. That, in part, is a reflection of just how much med students cram for these things.
Pretty much 80 hours in the library, plus, you know, breaks and sleeping now and again, hopefully eating, and ideally taking care of yourself, but you tend to sacrifice one or the other.
Like many med students, Priya Joshi calls the Step 1 portion the single biggest test soon-to-be doctors take. That's because hospitals heavily weight it when determining who to offer residencies to. And how prestigious your residency placement is can have deep ripples in your career. Not everyone loves having so much hang on a single thread.
The general idea is, like, so if your score is higher, you're a smarter doctor, but I guess the question would be, what makes a good doctor? And I don't know if that necessarily correlates with a higher Step 1 score.
Joshi just graduated from Sidney Kimmel Medical College last month and will start her residency at Penn in a few weeks. She says, on the flip side, all that studying did tie together the endless lectures and PowerPoints endured during the first 2 years of school.
I mean, there's something nice about, like, your family members calling you and you're like, oh, I know what kind of rash you have on your back, you know, because you finally get it. And it's like, okay, it's clicking. And that feels really good.
Of course, it's easy to say that after the test is over. Today, the NBME is recognized by all 50 states, though it took until 1994 before Texas came on board. That would have pleased Dr. William Rodman, who never got to see the test he fought for in action. Rodman died suddenly in 1916, just months before the first exams were given. For The Pulse, I'm Todd Bookman.